The hour having arrived, we'll call the Education Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum. And would anyone care to, who has read those minutes, would care to make that motion? Representative Hertaus, you look like you have done your homework for the evening.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that vote of confidence, I will move we approve the minutes.
All right. Representative Hertaus moves approval of the March 13th, 2014 minutes. Any discussion? If not, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion to approve the minutes prevails. All right. At this time, we have House File 2180. And Representative Murphy, Madam Majority Leader, thanks for being here. And would someone care to move House File? Representative Morgan moves House File 2180 for re-referral to the State Government Finance Committee. Thank you very much. Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee. Thank you, and you may present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and good morning. Good morning, Representative McDonald. You know, I didn't get back to the House last night until quite late, so I sort of prepped for a little bit longer. Message delivered. I'm happy to be here today with you to talk about House File 2180, which is the Health Care Insurance Transparency and Accountability Act. This is a piece of legislation that represents a couple of things from my perspective. First, it is a piece of legislation that has as its goal the means to drive down costs for health care for employees, school districts, and property taxpayers. And it is also, and the means by doing that is the use of competitive bidding. And it is a departure from where we have been in the last decade, as we, many legislators before me, have wrestled with this issue in the pursuit of creating a pool for school employees. This bill does not do that. And it is really clear, and I want to be very clear with you, that this bill does not create a pool. Instead, it creates the means for school districts to seek competitive bids on the price of health care coverage. The school districts retain the authority to make their choice after they receive the bid, but it does inject that idea that by understanding the options available to a school district and asking those who are engaging in the bidding process to put forth their best effort in a sealed proposal, that we believe the school districts and those involved will get a better price. And we have seen this model working in the Department of Human Services under the Dayton administration as they have moved to a competitive bidding process in our public programs, Medicaid and Minnesota Care. And they began a number of years ago asking for sealed competitive bids from the health plans, and as a result have incurred great savings over the past number of years in those public programs as they are striking a better deal through bidding and negotiating with the health plans. The other thing I want to say is that this is a piece of legislation that has a history, although this proposal is new. The folks at Education Minnesota understood after a decade's worth of time that the proposal that they were bringing forward to the legislature was not earning enough support to pass. And so they have come to us with a novel approach, one that uses competition and transparency to achieve the goal. There has been a lot of discussion since this bill is introduced, and Brandon will, I think, go through the names of the people that we have met with, but it is safe to say that we have spent hours talking with the various interests that are participating in the provision of health care, and it has been a good teacher for me. We are working very hard to make this process work uniformly to the extent we can, knowing that the participants in this system are differently situated from one another. The fully insured health plans, the self-insureds, the service co-ops, and those entrants into the district all operate in different ways, and so we're trying to add enough flexibility in the proposal so that they can participate and we don't necessarily interrupt or limit their participation, but instead allow that participation to continue with a different set of rules and a different goal of competitive sealed bidding. So we have done a lot of work. We've got a lot of agreement. We have a little more to do, and I think you'll hear some of that today. But I'm really delighted with the response that I've gotten from the participants, the openness to helping me understand the very technical issues that they are concerned with. and your support, the support of members as we've worked our way through the process. And the bill today is in much different shape than it was when it came to the Education Policy Committee. And I do have a couple of author's amendments to move to actually put the bill into the shape that I like it today.
Very good. And so we're looking for the A25 amendment. Would someone care to move the A25 amendment? Representative Reiner.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A25 amendment.
Very good. Representative Murphy, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And the A25 removes from the bill the section that applies the open meeting law to the advisory committees of the service co-ops dealing with group health insurance. And as we worked our way through the civil law committee, we got questions that I think made it clear to me that this area of the legislation needs more work. And the way that we had it constructed in the bill was going to be problematic, especially if school districts had a unique situation where someone's privacy might be revealed in that open meeting law. So at this point, we're going to strip out that section. And then on the appropriation, and I know a number of you have heard concerns about the appropriation and its ongoing nature. So in this amendment, the appropriation remains, but it becomes a one-year appropriation, a one-time appropriation with a report back to us from PEEP about the potential ongoing costs. And that is a response to the concerns that I've heard about the future nature of the competition among the many parties that are participating in this process.
Okay. All right. Any discussion on the A25 amendment? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just a couple comments. I appreciate that we've gone away from the pool idea and that this is, a modification of that. I still have concerns about the bill, but it's a wee step in the right direction, in my opinion. And I do appreciate that, okay? Just in regards to the amendment, so if I understood this correctly, this $1 million is going to help PEEP mitigate or offset some of their ongoing expenses for the bidding process. Is that correct, Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen.
Representative Murphy.
That is the intention.
Mr. Chair, follow-up question.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Then my question is, if this is going to be a fair playing field, then we should be helping Medica, Blue Cross, Health Partners, any other company with $1 million in order to offset their cost in the bidding process? Or why wouldn't that be reasonable?
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, as we have drafted the bill, we understand that the PEEP, which is, and what I've, just a sidebar, what I have learned through the course of this that you probably already know is PEEP is a public employee self-insured pool, right? And there are also pools that have been created through the service co-ops and the joint powers agreements, self-insureds that have come together. So we have quite a dynamic means of providing coverage across the state of Minnesota for school employees and school districts. And I have believed that because PEEP was put in place to offer a bid when requested, and it is a pool of public employees, that we should appropriate some funds to PEEP to be able to conduct the additional RFPs that we're asking them to do. And those costs should not necessarily be borne by the public employees that are currently in the pool, at least at the outset. And that is why we're appropriating some funds to PEEP, and that is why it's limited to 1 year to get them started.
Representative Grunhagen?
Yeah, I would just, this is the government's, and by the way, I should probably say Majority Leader Aaron, I appreciate your response. I just hope you don't get the majority votes on this amendment. But anyway, this is the government's definition of equal opportunity. We'll subsidize and give advantages to what we favor, and then let the private sector figure it out on its own. And so I just consider this fundamentally unjust by giving this $1 million an advantage. I appreciate it's limited to 1 year, and I guess I'd urge the committee to vote no on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just add that
Representative Murphy,
that the amendment is, you know, a restriction of that provision of the appropriation. So we are actually, you know, changing the bill and limiting its scope. Yeah. And that's why I would urge the support of even those who maybe don't love this provision.
Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate this amendment for a couple of reasons. Two issues I had raised in the policy committee are fully addressed, not fully addressed, but movement toward addressing in this amendment. And one is fair treatment of all parties regarding the open meeting law. And by removing the open meeting law provision as it applies to service cooperatives, you have balance now in that regard among all parties. But the $1 million I raised in a similar concern that Representative Grunhagen has, and I consider this a step toward containing a more equitable approach here. I understand the argument that PEEP is asking to be being required to produce bids in a much larger volume than it ever has before, much more so than the private companies. Nevertheless, I think there is an issue of fairness and equity, but limiting it to 1 year and reviewing the process, I think, at least begins to address that. So I support the amendment.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Madam Leader, looking at this, and because I've often heard this bill referred to as, you know, the transparency bill, when the bid is submitted, is there also going to be a statement from PEEP on how much the taxpayers are paying for, you know, here's the $1 million, and then any additional costs that are incurred that the state would then pay for, which are the taxpayers? And then I'm a little bit perplexed that you didn't take into account that the majority of the funds do not actually come from the state employees into PEEP, that they come from the agencies, and in this case the schools, you know, having been on a school board, having been a couple times negotiating contracts, I'm fully aware of the proportionality that's contributed by the district as opposed to the personnel. So, you know, again, that's, you know, taxpayer dollars. So in here, boiling it down for the transparency, because the government is subsidizing or running PEEP, is there going to be a component of the additional cost the taxpayers will incur in order to have PEEP bid and also provide the insurance?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, thank you for the question. I have not in the legislation instructed or conceived of a construction to PEEP with that instruction. But more broadly to your point, I think as we are working on this piece of legislation, it is clear that we are talking about public employees and tax dollars in the provision of health care for our schools and their employees. So I think if we were to add that kind of instruction, we would want to add it throughout the system, because throughout this bill, we are talking about public dollars and the utilization of public dollars for the provision of health care. And maybe the only place where the dollars are no longer public is the employee contribution through their salary, which is, you know, their private dollars contributing to the cost of their care. So I would need to think more about what that would mean in terms of the broad expanse of legislation that we're talking about here, but I wouldn't want to leave or limit that instruction only to PEEP, because I think there's way more public, where there's way more public dollars at play in this piece of legislation than just that.
Any other questions? If not, I think we're Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question about the $1 million, and maybe this is for you, Chair Markwart. Is that coming out of the budget target for education, or where is this coming? The $1 million, I know it's coming out of the general fund, but where is it coming out of the targets?
Yes, and Representative Woodard, that would come out of the education targets.
Okay. And then just as a quick
Representative
follow-up.
Representative Woodard.
And I, too, appreciate Representative Murphy. I know we've talked about this in Commerce, and the $1 million really was a sticking point. I appreciate your moving in the right direction and kind of listening to what we're saying here. And, you know, as an author's amendment, certainly give the deference to the author on this one to get the bill in the shape that you would like to see it. So I would recommend a yes vote on this. But thank you.
Representative Woodard.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick point of information. Yeah, I think that the amendment actually makes the bill better because it puts a limit on the $1 million. The current bill makes it unlimited. So I will change my suggestion to approving this, even though I don't like the idea in the first place. But I will vote for it.
Very good. And we'll have time for a lot more discussion once we get this in the proper form. So thank you, members. With that, I'll call for the vote on the Brainerd motion on the A25 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The A25 amendment is adopted. And Representative Murphy, you have one more. Anyone care to move the A26 amendment? Or is that, excuse me. Yep, the A26 amendment. Representative Morgan moves the A26 amendment. Representative Murphy, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This, if you were on the Education Policy Committee, you will recall that you adopted an amendment from Representative Erdahl adding exclusive bargaining language to the provisions on this part of the bill. And I suggested at that time that I would be bringing back a further amendment to modify that to make sure that we are clear, and that's what this amendment is about. And so I, in moving this amendment, I'm hoping to keep Representative Erdahl's proposal intact in the bill, but to limit it and narrow it in its scope and authority. And with that, I'd ask for your support.
Any comment? Representative Hertaus?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, with regard to this definition of representative, I'm just kind of thinking about the current news coverage about Anoka School District and the potential strike issue or voting to strike over health care and other benefits. My question really is centered about the idea that the entire district membership, the union membership, is really acting as representative. They're ratifying whether they approve of a plan or not. So does representative of an exclusive bargaining unit really include all of its membership?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, yes, it does. Just as we are a representative of those who send us here, so too is a representative of an exclusive bargaining unit authorized to do that work, representing the interests of a membership. And so, yes, I think that that person would be given that authority, and that is why we can tie it to a single person.
Representative Hertaus.
Okay, so to be clear, I'm understanding you to agree that every member of the teachers' union or school district that votes or ratifies approval of a contract is acting as a representative.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, no, that is not. I'm not agreeing with that part of your statement. I think that just like we're elected by the voters, and the voters cast their ballots to select you or I to represent their interests, so is the case that a representative of an exclusive bargaining unit can speak on behalf of their members. Does that make sense?
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I understand your answer. I guess I was just thinking about the current issue of the strike issue on Anoka School District, and that each of those individuals are really making the final decision, and whether or not you define by this amendment that they are representatives as well.
Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nobody in this room needs
lecture on the labor movement, but everybody needs to understand that unions are among our most democratic institutions in this great country. And whether you are a member or whether you are a member and the representative of the cooperative effort, which unions are, the result is the same. Majority, people get an opportunity to speak, people get an opportunity to vote, just like we do here. And whether it's on ratification of a contract, or ratification of policies, or ratification of any position that a union takes to management with their representative, the result is the same. There are oftentimes majority and minority opinions, but that's democracy.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment that if we extended Representative Hertas's conclusion to the general public, every person who votes in an election would be subject to the open meeting laws. I don't think anybody really thinks that would be the case. As Representative Ancels just mentioned, we have folks who vote no on contract settlements, and they're in the minority oftentimes, and they don't speak, obviously, for the majority of the membership. There are elected leaders. There are constitutions adopted by these organizations, by these exclusive representatives, and there is statute. I believe this refers specifically to 471.6161 that defines what a representative, an elected representative, duly elected representative of an exclusive representative is, and I think that's what Representative Murphy is referencing here, and I think we should stick to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Leader, looking at this, I get the impression of a single individual, but I'm not aware of any school district where in the negotiations for the contract that there aren't multiple representatives that are in that activity. And therefore, this as written, does it restrict it to an individual? Would think it'd be better to have representatives of an exclusive bargaining unit than a representative because, you know, again, there are multiple members from the bargaining unit that are selected to be on the negotiations team, and team is a multiple, it's not an individual.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
Quam, I think if we look at the language, it says a representative of an exclusive bargaining unit authorized. So if there was more than one representative of an exclusive bargaining unit authorized to make those decisions on behalf of the bargaining unit, this would apply.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Leader, and thank you for clarifying for the record that this would mean or could mean multiple.
Any other questions on the A26 amendment or comments? If not, Representative Morgan's motion, A26, going to move for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The A26, that motion prevails. The A26 amendment is adopted. Representative Murphy, do you have some testifiers this morning?
Mr. Chair, I do. There are three, and I believe they will be condensed.
Very good.
Like soup.
Welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourselves.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Brandon Rutke, and I'm the Director of Public Affairs for Education Minnesota, and I've been unsuccessfully trying to condense myself for the last couple of years, so I'll try to keep my testimony brief, though. So Education Minnesota, we're always looking for ways in which we can make health care coverage for educators more affordable, predictable, and fair. As Representative Murphy mentioned, over the last decade, we've worked on a variety of proposals, and today we just want to talk to you about a new proposal that we call the Health Insurance Transparency and Accountability Bill. The HITA bill would bring reforms to the way that insurance providers do business with our school districts and their employees. The bill focuses on, number one, creating competition with and increasing the number of bids our school districts receive from insurance providers. Number two, enacting good government reforms. And three, protecting members' premium dollars. So we seek to ensure a competitive bidding process in two ways. First, by requiring school districts to request at least three different bids for health insurance and requiring one of the three bids to be from PEEP, or the Public Employees Insurance Program. PEEP will be required to submit bids to all districts, providing every district with a benchmark bid. Secondly, the bill requires all health insurance bids to be put on the same timeline, to be sealed until all bids are opened at the same time and in front of employee representatives, and be based on claims data. This will ensure that providers are putting their best foot forward from the start and basing bids on usage data. Second, the bill enacts good government measures. In order to prevent even the appearance of any conflicts of interest, the bill prohibits school board members and those, now with the amendment of exclusive representatives, from receiving any gifts from people or organizations seeking to do business with the district. And finally, the bill protects educator premium dollars by requiring that any premium surpluses or refunds be returned to districts, be negotiated over, or used to offset premiums. This bill is different from our other proposals in the past, and it does not create a single statewide pool for school employees, and it does not force the district into choosing a specific plan or move them into a specific plan. Our goal with the bill is simple. We want districts to get multiple bids. We want a sealed bidding process to open up the process and bring the best bids forward. We want to let districts and their employees make the best choices for themselves. As Representative Murphy alluded to, Education Minnesota has met many times throughout this process with representatives from the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the School Boards Association, the School Business Officers, the Service Co-ops, the Health Plans, MREA. We have spent countless hours with all these groups and Representative Murphy trying to find accommodations, to find language that improves the bill and gets everybody on board. We've had very fruitful discussions and we've agreed to many changes, and we are committed to continuing to talk with others to continue this work. If you see from the multiple redrafts of the bill and the multiple authors' amendments that have been introduced, really shows the willingness of us to work with others to try to come up with a bill that satisfies all parties. Some of the changes that we've agreed to so far this session include changes to the agreement length, now allowing for agreements to go up to 5 years, changes to the charter school provisions, narrowing our proposal and now eliminating changes to the open meeting law, and clarifying the sealed bidding language. Based on a lot of discussion and feedback we had with school business officers, our members, and other members of the school groups, we've made significant clarifications for self-insured districts, including clarifying the services they must bid for, how they prepare their RFPs, and adjusting and making flexibility in the timelines to suit those individual districts. We have committed to continue our discussions with other parties and the authors to try and seek language that hopefully meets everyone's concern. Education Minnesota wants as much money as possible to be directed at students in the classroom. We want our members to get the best possible health care at the best price, and we believe this bill moves us in that direction. I urge passage of the bill out of committee today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll go to the next testifier, and then when we're complete, we can take questions at that point. Thank you. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Nystrom. I've been a teacher in the Burnsville Egan Savage School District for 27 years and have been a member of our Labor Management Benefits Committee for about 10 years. I'm here to testify in support of the HIDA bill. In my time in the district, we have gone from fully insured with a choice of health plans and service providers to a single insurer, gone through several plan design changes with co-pays and deductibles, and changed carriers several times. We moved to a plan with high deductibles and a 105 plan, which is partially self-insured, and now we're in our first year as a self-insured district. As we made the decision to switch to self-insured, it was invaluable for us to have a PEEP bid for comparison purposes. Also, understand that being self-insured does not mean that we're self-managed. That is, we still purchase the services of an insurer for their network of providers, negotiated service discounts, in our case, a wellness program, stop-loss coverage, and maximum liability cap. This bill will make sure that self-insured districts across the state seek multiple bids for those services. As a benefits committee, we are able to set our composite premium based on our own claims history, projected medical inflation, and we need to include those fixed costs of the insurer that we contract with. Those fixed costs right now represent between 8 and 10% of our total premium. Finally, it would be healthy for us to regularly examine whether we could benefit from returning to fully insured through a PEEP bid. While I personally believe that it is unlikely that returning to fully insured would be cost effective, I've seen enough changes to insurance structures over the years that it would serve as an important data point in determining the efficacy of remaining self-insured. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nystrom. And next.
My name is Gretchen Garcia. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I represent the Independent School District 112 Chaska Education Association, and that's proudly serving the schools of Eastern Carver County in Chaska, Victoria, Chanhassen, and East Union. We have a very long name. My story very much echoes what Bob gave as testimony, so I'm not going to repeat his remarks, even though they are very similar, and I could do so almost verbatim for our district situation. We are also in our first year of being self-insured, and our journey was similar to Burnsville in the way that Mr. Nystrom described. One thing, when we were fully insured, we did bring down premiums by looking at a PEEP bid. We did not end up taking that bid. So again, by having multiple proposals in front of an insurance committee doesn't dictate which proposal the district takes. You're still free to choose. And I know for our administration at the district level, that's a very important piece. I've spoken with this about this with my superintendent, and he agrees that multiple bids proposals are a very appropriate way to go in keeping down costs and making health insurance affordable for our members. Let's see. Transparency helps districts like ours who have struggled to maintain premium costs. Even with a benefit, if our members are taking a family level of insurance, annually they're paying between $8,000 and $12,000 out of pocket. And on a teacher's salary, that's a sizable chunk of an annual income. So my little tag is you don't know what you don't know. And having a sealed bidding process, looking at three proposals, provides information, and information is power, and information is what we're about in education. So I thank you for your time this morning.
Ms. Garcia, thank you so much. All right, any questions for any of the Representative Hertaust?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just probably two or three questions. In your testimony, you mentioned that you sought multiple bids and that you didn't necessarily take the PEEP bid. I guess my concern is if we're moving now to a sealed bid process, does that flexibility still exist for the school districts to choose the plan that they feel still fits their needs best in terms of coverage and qualification, even if it's not the cheapest bid?
Ms. Retke? Mr. Retke?
Chairman Marquardt, Representative Hertaust. One of the things that came up in the discussions as this went forward was how do we handle bids when they come in, and that was one of the earlier author's amendments, was to say that the school district is allowed to continue negotiating with up to two bidders for reduced costs or improved services, with agreement of the exclusive rep on who those two bidders are. And so the way that we would conceive it is if you did get three or four bids, they would have a discussion or be agreed, yep, these are the two best that we want to go back to. Let's continue to discuss them. I think to your point about the cheapest bid isn't always the best bid. There could be network problems. There could be benefit situations. And our members, I think, are as cognizant of that as anybody. They understand their insurance because what they save in insurance might be more on salary. What they give up in salary might be for a more beneficial insurance through the negotiation process. So they're very involved in that discussion about what is the whole package of insurance. And I think the district and the employees generally try to reach an agreement that benefits both sides of that.
Representative Hertaust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm encouraged to hear that because I think that is an important component. Having had to officiate over meetings like that, you're correct. The cheapest isn't always the best. The second part that I wanted to ask is with regard to recognizing that the school districts are an employer just like any other employer. in the state. We've heard all of the wonderful things that are going to be happening with the MNsure and the Affordable Care Act. I'm curious why we are not just having PEEP register as one of the providers under the MNsure program and allowing school districts to consider them as one of the multiple candidates that would be providing them coverage. It seems unfair in the sealed bidding process to not include these folks under the same purview that the rest of our employers have to operate under the rules. And when you're obtaining a sealed bid, you're getting one provider who's having their costs of submitting that bid subsidized by the previous amendment, and the other ones don't get that opportunity. So this is supposed to be a competitive marketplace, but it's not a marketplace if some providers are provided advantages over the other.
This might be better for the author, Representative Murphy or Mr. Redke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Under current law, MNsure could be a bidder for the group 15 under, but for those 15 over, not yet. But it is going to be a part of the marketplace, and it could be a bidder in the future, and nothing in the proposal suggests otherwise.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, MNsure is not an entity by itself providing insurance. It is comprised of all of the providers within that purview of the exchange, MNsure. So why isn't PEEP just part of or a member of the exchange?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus. You know, I will say, as I have been working on this piece of legislation, and I've done some work in healthcare in the past, what is clear to me that regardless of the arrangement, be a school district getting a fully insured product, a school district in a self-insured model or product, a school district choosing to get its coverage through PEEP, or maybe in the future a school district choosing coverage through MNsure, that behind that choice are the same health providers that we're all accustomed to. So Medica and Blue Cross and Health Partners and Preferred One are present, not in every part in the state, but present in each of these different arrangements. And so I think that, to your question, and I think maybe I'd like you to repeat your question because I just want to make sure I get my answer correct, please.
Representative Hertaus.
Okay, well, thank you. I think I'll end my questioning there. I had a follow-up, but I'll let some of the other folks have a chance to speak.
Mr. Chair, I know I didn't fully answer your question, so I just wanted you to restate it, if you would, so that I can make sure that I'm being clear in my response.
Okay. Well, my question was why this entity, PEEP, does not register and conform to all the conformities that the other plans under the exchange are being asked to do in creating this allegedly fair and competitive marketplace. Why do we need to operate outside of the Affordable Care Act and MNsure and just allow the school districts as an employer like other employers just go to the exchange and let PEEP be one of those many providers that provides coverage?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus. It is an idea that I hadn't considered until now. I think it's also an idea that our current health plans in Minnesota, the insurers would not, I don't know that they would like that idea very much, but it's certainly one worth exploring. I'm not sure that PEEP would qualify. I just would have to look at the various constructs, the relationship of PEEP in this environment and MNsure in this environment to see if PEEP would be a suitable participant within the exchange. And I just haven't given that question any thought until now. And so I don't have a great answer other than maybe we should look at that together, Representative Hertaus.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you've struck on the very chord that is fundamentally the flaw in what we're experiencing in the private sector. You stated that you didn't know that PEEP would necessarily qualify, that it would meet those criteria conditions. It is that very essence that you're creating a system here that is exempting out public employees working for a public employer from the rules that the rest of the private sector has to conform to. And the health coverage that's offered under the Affordable Care Act is unnecessarily including coverages and requirements that a lot of people do not choose to want to be covered for. So this appears, at least at its face, I'm not saying it is, but it appears at its face that this is a carve-out and an exception for certain individuals to have a better option than that which the private sector has.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas. So, you know, I think by asking questions, it opens our mind to thinking, but it certainly doesn't draw a conclusion, and I didn't hear you draw a conclusion in the statement that you just made. But I think that the bright line that you may see between the private and the public on this piece of legislation is not nearly as bright to me as it may be to you. So in this piece of legislation, we really are talking about largely public employees and public schools and their coverage. And all we're doing, essentially, is saying, dear school districts, it is a good idea to get good information as you are making decisions about your health coverage. And we think that requesting, all we're asking is that they request bids from the various entities that are currently participating in this marketplace. That includes our fully insured private sector health plans, self-insured, the co-ops, which are more publicly oriented. Give us your best shot. Give us your best price. Using the tools of competition in the market, really to drive a better deal for the school districts. We're not altering the rules of the road. We are asking and building a piece of legislation that recognizes the different entrants, trying to apply a set of rules to those different entrants as uniformly as we can, but recognizing their differences, so making some alterations and flexibility to try and achieve that goal. But I want it to be clear that from the work that we're doing on this legislation is largely in the public sphere, not in the private, because we're dealing with public schools and public school employees, property tax dollars, public dollars. But we recognize that in healthcare in Minnesota, even in our public programs like Minnesota Care and Medicaid, our private entities, Health Partners, Medica, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Preferred One, are participating. So there is that, if you will, blending like salt water and fresh water together in the delivery and provision of health care in Minnesota between the privates and the publics, and that is true in this bill as well.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, with that said, when you just said that schools get good information, you require this legislation will get schools to have good information and request bids in the marketplace for good product and best price. Yet the woman, the lady from Carver County, the great county that I was raised in, said that they already do that. They sought multiple bids, including PEEP. So with that said, why is this bill necessary? Why is it necessary to spend $1 million for this when that money could be best suited for the classroom? If this is already the case, it appears on the surface that this piece of legislation is then truly not even needed.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, because it's not necessarily happening everywhere. And we think that the school districts could achieve a better deal if there is a process put in place that assures that the school districts are getting bids.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. So with that said, you're saying, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but from what I hear you saying is that the school districts aren't doing this already. So we don't trust that our school districts are smart enough or wise enough to seek multiple bids for the best product at best price for their members. But yet government, we know best. So without our intervention, school districts really can't do this on their own. I think that you're not giving my district, anyway, Wright County, enough credence. They certainly have the ability, capability, and the wise and wherewithal to do this without lawmakers to require it. But please enlighten me that if other school districts aren't doing this.
Representative McDonald, that's not what I quite heard. But Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. Yeah, we share, you know, we share a number of things, the gift of gab, but that is not what I said. So I have a lot of faith. I have a lot of faith in our school districts. I'm just hoping that we give them a better tool.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to request the annual report of PEEP so that we can actually analyze what Mr. Retke was saying and what you were saying about cost savings to one of the agencies that's participating. So if we could see that annual report so we can do our own analysis, I would appreciate that.
Very good. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Leader. I've got a few things that confuse me in this bill. One being Section 6, Subdivision 10, in lines 324 and 325. This has to do with insurance premium rebates, and I'm aware of service cooperatives regularly having rebates come back. And it says proportional to the number of insured lives covered by that exclusive representative. And the rebate, I could understand it being proportional to what was contributed. In other words, if you have a family coverage, if you have 12 children or if you have one child, it's the same dollars. And I don't understand dollars contributed that are refunded being proportional to people when that isn't actually what the premiums are based on, and I don't see anything in here that's proportional to the portion of the premiums paid. In other words, if the district provides 80 or 90% of the premium, this sort of indicates that all of the money is open to and is proportional to. It just doesn't make dollars and cents or match the fairness of anything that I've ever come across.
Mr. Retke. Chairman Marco, Representative Quam, I think the intent of the language is that, in going back to your example of if 90% of the premium is paid for by the district, then if there is a rebate or a refund, and I think we use refund going forward because we changed rebate language to refund, that then 90% of that refund would be district money, and then that 10% would go back to the employees because that was the proportion of the refund that was paid for out of their pocket. So the intent would not be to say if the district were to get a $10,000 check in a refund, that entire $10,000 is up for grabs for the employees. It would be the proportion of that $10,000 that is the same split that is employer to employee percentage of the premium. And maybe that language isn't clear enough, but that is the intent of the language to set it as that way.
Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, that might be the stated intent by the testifier. However, that isn't the language that's here. The language indicates that all of it will be, that the school district must negotiate with the exclusive representative regarding the refund amount. And, I don't see anything in here that has the proportional amount paid by the district being exempted from that. And also, I don't see as to where anywhere in the bill the equivalency of a bid. If you've got someone, an entity, that gives refunds somewhat regularly, that in effect produces a history of a devalued or decreased premium, and that should be part of the consideration of what is the bid. And so I don't see any of that, you know, transparency, fairness in the bill. And I don't see, or I haven't heard any discussion. I've got many districts and superintendents that when they've gotten bids and they've looked at the PEEP, the network and the options don't include. I mean, Mincher was brought up, and you know, a little outfit called the Mayo Clinic, and they have a set of clinics and a network of providers, and they weren't included in the option of Mincher. And I know in some of the PEEP things there are restricted networks, and you know, frankly, it's great to have a low premium, but it is worthless if you have to drive hours to get to a provider for you know, anything other than a generalist. And many of the teachers I am aware of have children, and they frequently need a specialist, and I wouldn't want to deny them that option by forcing them into a state network that maybe isn't supplying the options needed, you know, for greater Minnesota. So I see this bill as lacking some of the protections that I would deem are necessary for not just the you know, teachers, but for the community as a whole.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And we are, I know, in education finance and not in health and human services. But I will tell you that my first work as a registered nurse was in a rural community in Wisconsin. I worked at St. Joseph's Hospital in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Marshfield is about 18,000 people. St. Joseph's Hospital is a part of the Marshfield Clinic, which is like the Mayo Clinic, though much smaller and not nearly as wonderful, I will say. But it was a great place to work, and it drew patients from all over northern Minnesota, the Upper Peninsula, and even into western, from western Wisconsin, maybe tripping over into Minnesota a little bit. So a great big hospital and clinic system like the Mayo. And they had a great record of providing care, and they had a wonderful reputation. It was a really great place to work, great place to first practice nursing for me. One of the things that they struggled with, because they were in the center of Wisconsin in a rural community, really away from any of the population centers, was an adequate number of especially physician providers in specialties, and keeping the registered nurses that came there because it was such a small community. And we face that same issue in Minnesota. And it isn't necessarily the result of our health plans or our hospitals or the networks that they create, which, you know, your question fundamentally is about network adequacy and not about the mechanism for providing coverage. But we are a really big state. Tall and sparsely populated in some parts of rural Minnesota. And sometimes that means that we have a challenge in getting the right specialists geographically placed, distributed, to make sure that no one has a long drive to get to the provider that they need to. That's not a result of this proposal. It's not a result of the work that our hospitals and health plans and providers are doing, but just the result of the fact that we live in a big state with population centered in regional areas, meaning that some places that we choose to call home in Minnesota may not necessarily have access to immediately in their community a neonatologist, for instance. And so that is a challenge I think we all face together. I mean, it's one that we face for the future of healthcare. It is one we're going to conquer using new providers and new means of delivering care using technology like broadband, which is already happening, and it's awesome in Minnesota. But it's one we need to work on, probably not in education finance, but in health and human services, where I know you are also an expert.
Representative Quam, and then we're going to go to Representative Morgan, right. Then we're going to go to new testifiers.
The crux of my question is we've got bids out there, and if the bids were in Copex, were in euros, you know, et cetera, You know, you can grab your phone and do the conversion and compare them. But healthcare is so complex that these comparing these bids is not as easy. And therefore, I just wanted to bring that out, that this is, it's really hard, apples to apples. And the lowest bid may be for more dollars up front, but less copays, et cetera. And I think we need to keep that in consideration when we, you know, force this change.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The language that Representative Quam is referencing, Section 6, Subdivision 10 on insurance premium rebates, refers to an exclusive representative. I think it's all too easy to forget that teachers are not the only group represented by an exclusive representative in a school district. I think in the Burnsville Egan Savage School District, we have 10 or 11 different bargaining units. So when we are talking about these rebates, I think it's important to realize that other groups are paying in to the insurance pool, and they are also accounted for in this bill as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Retke, and we will hear from other testifiers, if you would come forward. Superintendent Fujitake, I think, is next, and Mr. Superintendent Carlson. And good morning and welcome. And
thank you.
If you'd like to start, please introduce yourself.
Morning. Les Fujitake, Superintendent Bloomington Schools. Chair Marquardt, committee members. Self-insurance plans are one of the fastest growing segments in the health insurance industry. A reason for that growth is because self-insured plans can be transformative to an organization. For example, in Bloomington, we have an employee committee that helps us govern our self-insurance plan. The committee has three responsibilities. First, they have fiduciary responsibilities to their coworkers to set premiums, help set premiums, set reserve levels, study claims, adjust benefits, but most important, they review and recommend all major contracts, third-party administrators, services, stop-loss coverages, and pharmaceutical services. Their second responsibility is professional development. They need to keep up to date on the rapidly growing, changing health insurance industry. And third, they have to communicate to the members about the, to brief them on updates, issues, and get feedback from members. This kind of change, this kind of way of doing business is what all businesses covet. We have engaged employees taking ownership. There's transparency and accountability. It doesn't come easy. It takes a lot of debate, discussion to move away from the traditional model of a group coverage to a self-insured plan. But once that change takes place, we have believers. We studied the country, and we can't find a single self-insured school district that has converted back to a group plan. Now, this is very similar to when a school district opts to go from the traditional textbook to digitally based content in a computer device such as a laptop. It takes a lot of discussion and debate to change conventional wisdom and change people's minds. But once that change takes place, we have believers in students, staff, and parents. Everybody believes in this thing, and they become educated consumers and shoppers, and they own the self-insurance plan, and they own the laptop choice. They don't go back. So we don't take bids again for traditional textbooks because there's not a fair comparison, because the textbooks could be cheaper, but the value added of no 35-pound backpacks, flipped instruction, engaged learners, all these things add value, and this is not a comparison. The same is true when you convert to a self-insurance plan. Two different things. And to get, we have educated shoppers, when they look at these plans, they are not interested. I'm speaking for our employees. They like what they're doing. They have ownership and control of their own plans. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much. And just stay put for some questions, potentially. Superintendent Carlson, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Denny Carlson, superintendent of the Anoka-Hennepin School District. We've been a very successful self-insured school district since the 1970s. We went to a self-insured plan approximately 40 years ago as a way to minimize rate increases. It has worked well for us. We've been able to provide excellent health benefits for our staff while minimizing cost increases. Over the last 10 years, self-insured districts such as Anoka-Hennepin have seen single-digit increases, while other districts have seen double-digit increases annually. In fact, Anoka-Hennepin went 3 years with no premium increase in the last 4 years. Containing insurance costs frees up more money to spend in the classroom educating students. The proposed legislation does not offer any benefit to districts that are currently self-insured. In fact, it would unnecessarily burden self-insured districts with greater expenses and increased administrative time. We also believe this bill would take local control away from our school board and administration and micromanage millions of dollars we see as ours. We strongly urge our delegation of 20 House and Senate members and this committee to either oppose the bill as it is currently written or to amend it to allow self-insured districts to be exempt or opt out. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I think we have a few more testifiers, and then we'll take some questions. Mr. Bourgeois, and thank you very much. And then Ms. Kelleher, I think, is okay. On deck, too. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Marquardt and representatives. I'm Paul Bourgeois, the Executive Director of Finance and Operations for Minnetonka Public Schools. We've been self-insured for 12 years. And since that time, we've had average premium increases of 3.62%. Self-insurance is extremely effective because all the employees buy in. We have representatives from every bargaining unit, not just the teachers, but our custodial staff, our nutrition services staff, our paraprofessional staff, six different unions, all working on the committee to come up with a package of benefits that we all believe are the best for us. And then we do go out and shop third-party administration and also try to work in the networks that are out there. So we are doing things that this bill somewhat seems to indicate that we might not be doing, but we've been doing them for years. The other important thing to remember about self-insured districts overall in the state, we are about 23% of all the students in the state. And since we all staff, maybe a little different from district to district, but pretty close, we're probably somewhere in the terms of 22 to 24% of all the state employees. School district employees in the state, and we seem to be doing okay. If there's other districts that are having difficulties, by all means, you know, help them. But we seem to be doing fine. There are currently statutes on the books regarding the need for us to periodically go out for various competitive services. There's statutes on the books on how we are supposed to purchase services in terms of our request for proposals, request for quotes, or even bids. And we also have the statutes on the books that give employee groups the options to go to PEEP anytime they would like. So you know, there are things already out there. Finally, the one of the things that I would like to also bring up is I'm concerned with this particular bill on two issues. One of them is, it was kind of hinted at a little bit before, but all school districts right now, if this bill is passed, we pretty much won't ever have the option in a worst-case scenario to be able to tell our employees, well, hey, we'll be able to give you an allocation and you can go tailor your health care by going to MnSure. That option is basically being taken away by this particular bill. The second thing is I'm concerned about the funding in terms of PEEP.
Yeah.
You know, in Minnetonka, we have about 1% of the students in the state, and we have in our self-insured fund $10 to $11 million worth of claims. Well, if you spin that up to 100% of the state,
yeah,
we're talking about potential health insurance claims of $1.1 billion to $1.2 billion annually. Under this bill, what happens if 25% of the districts end up switching to PEEP all at one time? PEEP is a very small organization. They don't have a lot of claims reserves. And cash is king in the self-insurance business. You need to carry significant cash reserves to both be able to pay claims and also to be able to absorb any years that might be a bad year where you have losses. And granted, that might be mitigated with a pool, but a pool like PEEP would still need a significant claims reserve and significant cash resources to start paying claims before all the first year premiums have come in from school districts. So there's a potential for a large switch to PEEP under this, and they might not have the reserves available. They might have to come back to you to ask for reserves a year from now. And the last thing I would like to mention is that it does seem that this bill would tend to disincentivize either public or for-profit or non-profit entities who still must actually operate with somewhat of a surplus to be able to handle and set up their own premium reserves or claims reserves. It's a disincentive for them to actually submit bids on insurance services for school districts because PEEP really seems to have almost the implicit guarantee of the state behind it. So you wonder what the market's going to look like over the long term and the downstream effects. So for all those concerns, we really would like at least to have self-insured districts. We are doing fine, and we'd like to be exempted from this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district across the state and their elected school board members. First off, I want to thank Majority Leader Murphy. She has done a fantastic job with this bill, listening to our concerns. And if you've had any time to watch how this bill has been crafted, there has been big changes through every stop. And I want to thank her for having time to hear us and really helping try and craft some of get rid of some of our concerns in the bill. Saying that, I want to just lay out a few things that is really just hanging out there still for us. We're concerned, as Representative Quam identified, with the rebate method. We talk about it being proportional. Would it be proportional of the total number of people in the pool? Would it be proportional to every employee's entitled to a certain amount? It would be very nice if some of those technical details were included in the law so they would not have to be bargained at the local level. It would create, I think, a much more fair atmosphere across the state. If you could just make it clear what the formula on the rebate is you want us to use. Another thing, we would really support the folks who've been in front of you about self-insured districts just need to come out. They're a different animal. As they're written in this bill, they would bid out for their administrative services, and that's just a teeny tiny fraction of what they do every 2 years. Just the bidding alone and the need for such a very small specific service could inflate those prices significantly, and we just feel they don't belong in this group at all. And last but not least, I want to leave you with a thought as we talk about how the process would work between the school district and the exclusive representative. So you unseal the bids, you open them up, and then you have time to negotiate with two of the vendors. My question to you is, what if you don't agree on who those two are? Is there some way to work through that, that kind of conflict at the local level? That's all I have for you, Mr. Chairman, but I really appreciate Representative Murphy's leadership on this. She has been what I consider a little bit of a health and care angel. In past years, I know this bill has caused me a lot of personal heartburn, and her open-door policy and her can-do attitude is infectious. So it really has changed the whole feeling around this bill. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for those points. I think they're very have a lot of merit. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against House File 2180? You'd please come forward. And then we'll take some questions and then move to amendments.
Mr. Chairman and members, welcome. I'm neither for or against. I hope I can still make just a
very point. Good. You may.
This committee is very familiar with the Minnesota.
Please state your name.
Oh, sorry. Sam Walseth, here with the Minnesota Rural Education Association, organization of 175 school districts, many of whom are very small entities, and we've been working with the author and advocates for the bill just on a technical piece, and I just wanted to bring it up for this committee's knowledge, is just to ensure that small schools can maintain using joint powers agreements to satisfy the bidding requirements in the this new law. They currently do. They're about, we have about 100 school districts with fewer than 700 students. Those districts are administered with maybe two administrators, and they have punted this type of business service, insurance bidding, to cooperative efforts for the last 20 plus years. if this were to become a new requirement back on those individual districts, they don't have the in-house capacity to do it. It's not something they've done for a very long time. And I don't think what I'm hearing from folks is it's not the intent to take that away, but we just want to be sure that's clear going forward. I think if you go back out there this summer and those small schools say, oh, wait, what, we have to do this on our own now, that's going to create a lot of trouble. So we're just here to put that on the record, just that we want to make sure that's clear with the new HIDA regulations going forward, that they can, in fact, continue using joint powers.
Mr. Walsh, thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman, can I put another hat on for the Minnesota Service Cooperative?
If it's relating to House File 2180, you may. Turn around once.
One of those.
There you go.
There, now I'm back,
right,
Mr. Chairman.
And please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Service Cooperative. There are 9 cooperative entities in the state, 8 of whom in greater Minnesota who do group insurance purchasing through those joint powers efforts on behalf of about 240 entities. We want to thank the author and advocates for a lot of the work that they've done on the bill. I think Mr. Redke rattled through a lot of the changes that we first put on the record back in education policy, which seemed like years ago, although I think it was only about 2.5 weeks ago now. Narrowing the open meeting law back to the service cooperative boards themselves and freeing up those committees to do their work, we think is an important move. Moving the issue of premium refunds going back to districts to the general school district statute is something we had requested, and that's now in the bill. Clarifying that sealed bids can go forward, that districts and bargaining units can go forward and continue to negotiate with vendors after bids are open, was something we'd requested, and that's in the bill. Cleaning up some of the language around PEEP having to abide by some of the key bidding requirements that are in the bill, we'd asked for that, and that's now in the bill. And so I just want to put those on record that there has been a lot of progress made coming forward from committee to committee, and we appreciate all the work. The subsidy for the service cooperatives in particular, looking at the $1 million going to PEEP, is the consternation for them. They're going to be kind of competing head-to-head for school district business, and when your competitor has $1 million head start on you, it's a little unnerving. We do appreciate the author's amendment today to narrow that to just a one-time appropriation. The ongoing $1 million was certainly a lot of consternation. $1 million one time is still a frustrating piece, but we do appreciate the progress being made there. So, Mr. Chairman, I just want to put those things on the record and stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else here for or against House File 2180? All right, we've got 3 people on the list, and then we're going to go to amendments. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I find myself in agreement with the concerns and those who oppose this bill. I do, again, express appreciation to Representative Murphy and her work on this bill compared to what I've seen it be in the past, and I think she's done an excellent job. I happen to have been a school board member on one of the districts that used the co-ops for our health insurance bids, and it seemed to work relatively well. We did bid outside against the co-ops at times, and we did that without being mandated by the state for some reason. I'm not sure why, but I think the having been on the negotiation committee, obviously health insurance is a major concern to everybody involved. It's a major concern and cost driver for our administrators, school board members, and of course we want to give the best benefits possible at the best price possible to the teachers and the staff and the employees of the district. But I think this is not going to result in this, and I think it will drive up costs for especially smaller districts who have to live under the mandate. I find myself in agreement with national union leaders, okay, especially smaller districts who have to live under the mandate. I find myself in agreement with national union leaders, okay, who have stated that the biggest problem with health care is the ACA and its mandates and taxes on the system. And in fact, they've even gone on to state national union leaders that it's going to damage the middle class by hurting the 40-hour work week. That's where our problem is. And micromanaging the system is not going to cure that problem. And finally, one of the reasons that self-insured plans can be more competitive and flexible as far as the benefits, they're not under the mandates are they excluded from some of the mandates and taxes that private insurance have to operate under? So if you want private insurance and self-insured plans and lower cost and better benefits for your union employees and for the public in general, let's exclude these mandates and taxes from all insurance plans, and then we'll get the competition and the lower cost, and we're all going to be happier in how the health insurance is provided for union members and non-union members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Walseth, well, first of all, comment. The appropriation will be ongoing. I can guarantee it. PEEP is a small organization. They're going to be coming back if this becomes law. But my question is...
Well, just for clarification, Representative Erickson, it is currently right now one-time funding.
I understand that,
okay,
Mr. Chair.
Very good.
I'm just
everyone
projecting
understood
into the future.
All right, I see.
Mr. Walseth, to what extent will... If this becomes law, this affect other governmental units who use service cooperatives for their group insurance plans? What do you foresee in the future as far as changes that might have to occur?
Mr. Walseth.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, the current cooperative bid cycle under current law is a four-year bid cycle. And the way they handle the school pools and the city-county pools is they stagger the bid process. So every 2 years... You know, they'll go for school pool, and then 2 years later, city, county, and then 2 years later, school pool. Under this, the HIDTA regulations will require a two-year limited contract unless there's agreement with the largest employee groups. And so what it will do is you'll stack another bid cycle. The school pool will essentially go out every 2 years unless there's an agreement by all the largest employee groups in that pool to say we'll enter into a long-term contract. So potentially they could continue on that four-year staggered term. But what it means is a lot more administrative activity perhaps every 2 years on school pool. And how that impacts the city-county process, that will be running parallel at the time. I'm not quite sure. But it's, you know, the bidding process requires a lot of, you know, staff time and energy. And so I think they're looking at just the administrative workload of the stacking of those two bid cycles.
Thank you. Representative Morgan, final question.
And Mr. Chair, I have a lot to say, but looking at the time, I think we should get to the amendments.
Very good. All right, and that's what we're going to do. Thank you for that, Representative Morgan. So what I have here is the A14 amendment. Who would like to offer that?
I'd like to offer that, Mr.
Representative Grunhagen moves the A14 amendment. Representative Grunhagen, if you'd like to speak to your amendment.
In the interest of time, I'll make this brief. Basically what it does, just on page 7, line 18, it changes the word must, which is a mandate, to may. And again, it goes back to many of the comments that have been made, both of those with concern to this bill and also those who have opposed it. Having been in the process for years, I trust the local administrators and school board members. Let's give them some credit. And I even trust the local teacher union organizations to come up with the best possible solution for their district and to micromanage that process in the hope of creating more cost-effective health insurance with a state mandate. I've just never seen that work in my whole life. And so, again, I've sold health insurance for 35 years. And so this would simply allow the flexibility to continue, trust our local superintendents, school boards, and teachers union to come up with the best solution for their district, not impose additional cost. And I strongly urge that on a bipartisan basis, we adopt this based on the testimony that we've heard here today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep, thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Grunhagen, I would ask that the committee not adopt this amendment. In fact, when we introduced the bill, we required a bid from PEEP in this process and heard back from other participants in this process that they would also like to be meeting that same standard, and so we've strengthened that provision, and the co-ops and the fully insureds are also, if requested, required to submit a bid to make that equal. And so in the work that we've done, we've reached that conclusion, and I think that's a strong conclusion, and so therefore I'd ask for a no vote.
Representative Grunhagen.
I'd like to roll call this.
Very good. Roll call's been called for. Any other discussion? If not, the clerk will take the roll on the A-14 amendment.
Chair Markwart.
No.
Vice Chair Slocum.
No.
Representative Anzels.
No.
Bernardi.
No.
Briner.
No.
Dabney. Sandra Erickson.
Yes.
Grunhagen.
Yes.
Kurtas.
Yes.
Mariani.
No.
McDonald.
Yes.
Moran.
No.
Morgan.
No.
Myra.
Yes.
Newton.
No.
Quam. Radinovich.
No.
Seltzer.
No.
Wills.
Yes.
Woodard.
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the A-14 amendment does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. And on the next roll call, Representative Woodard, you will be right after the Vice Chair. Sorry about that. The next one is the A-15 amendment I have. Who would like to move that?
Mr. Chair, I'm moving it.
Very good. Representative Hertas moves the A-15 amendment. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, Madam Majority Leader Murphy, thank you for your work in this effort, too. And I think that the main goal and the concern is to create the broadest diversity and the best benefits and opportunities for all that are not just working in government, but all of our citizens. What my amendment does, in light of the testimony that we've heard today, regarding the self-insured and joint powers agreements and service cooperatives, I feel also with some testimony we've heard about the financial depth of PEEP and whether or not they are prepared to take on a lot more business, that we provide a phase-in opportunity. So on page 9, line 7, the very last words in the or text in the legislation simply deletes 2014 and inserts 2017 or after the Federal Affordable Care Act is fully implemented, whichever comes first. And I think this moves us in the right direction and provides for a phase-in opportunity for the direction that we seem to be headed. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, and I would ask the committee not to support this amendment. It's not so much a phase-in as a complete delay. And whether we agree or not, I think this is a piece of legislation that is a good idea and one that will serve to drive down costs using competition, and I don't know why we would delay that. So, Mr. Chair and members, I would ask that you vote no.
Very good. Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Representative Murphy, when you state that this will drive down costs, and certainly I believe that this is your intent, and for that, that is a grand idea and has great merit, but based upon some of the testimony of the self-insured, that their increases only went up 3.62%, while others went up, you know, in triple digits, will this keep their cost down as well?
Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. There are many entities that are continuing to look to become or to move in the direction of self-insurance. In our language, we've worked with many self-insured districts, not all of them. I'm meeting some new people today. But we've worked with many of the self-insured districts to make our proposal flexible so that it works for them. But fundamentally, those that choose to stay in the self-insured arena have that choice. And if it is working for their school district, they'll have that choice. The discretion about the direction that they move, whether they choose PEEP after they've looked at the bids, stay self-insured after they've looked at the bids, move into a fully insured product after they look at the bids, rests with the school district, and this bill does not change that. That is current law.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Majority Leader Murphy, you're correct. I did use the term phase in, and it is a delay, but I think the delay is necessary because it gives opportunity for school districts to prepare for a coming change should this become law. And furthermore, I don't think that any of us really fully understand the full impacts of the Affordable Care Act when it's fully implemented. So I think that those are all considerations that come into play, and that's why I would respectfully ask for an aye vote on this, and I would also request a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Ansells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, this has nothing to do with the Affordable Care Act. And if you're in a small, poor district, whether you are a classroom teacher or a custodian or any other employee of a small, poor school district, competitive market is a good thing for you, and I just don't think many of the districts in my area can wait until 17 for a more competitive situation in the marketplace to purchase health care. It would be really a mistake. So I'm urging everybody to vote down this amendment.
Representative Hertoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess we just heard now that the Affordable Care Act is not going to provide options as promised to all Americans. And, you know, this has been the promise for several years now that this is a solution. And interesting. Thank you.
I just want to clarify that this next roll call is not on the Affordable Care Act. Yes. We're not repealing that, but it is on the A-15 amendment, and so the roll call has been called on the A-15 amendment. We'll take the roll.
Chair Markford.
No.
Vice Chair Slocum.
No.
Representative Woodard.
Yes.
Ansells.
No.
Bernardi.
No.
Reiner.
No.
Dabney, absent. Sandra Erickson.
Yes.
Gruenhagen.
Yes.
Hertas.
Yes.
Mariani.
No.
McDonald.
Yes.
Moran.
No.
Morgan.
No.
Myra.
Yes.
Newton.
No.
Quam.
Da.
Radinovich.
No.
Seltzer.
No.
Wills.
Yes.
On the A-15 amendment, there being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the A-15 motion, it does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Drat.
Members, I have the A-28 amendment. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to thank Representative Murphy for working so hard on trying to address the concerns that have been brought up. And I appreciate the changes that have been made so far, and I think there's still more work to be done. So that's why I brought this amendment forward. We've heard a lot of testimony from...
Would you like to move the amendment?
Oh, yes. You did. Thank you.
Okay. So yes. Representative Wills moves the A-28 amendment. Very good. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've heard a lot of testimony from the self-insured school districts on concerns that they have with the current language, and I know you're working to get that to be something that they can work within. So we heard testimony from Minnetonka and Anoka today, and then we've also been getting emails from Orono School District, and I've heard concerns from my school district, District 196, which is Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Eagan, about making sure that self-insured districts have an exemption or an opt-out, because it's really comparing apples to oranges in the way that they insure their districts. And so my amendment is intended to create that exemption or opt-out, but I was looking at the language for the amendment and the bill, and I have concerns with my own amendment not actually accomplishing what I had intended. So at this time, I'd like to withdraw the amendment, and I'll continue to work on it for a later committee. So just wanted to make sure that you understand that we're trying to get to the same goal, I think. So
thank you, Representative Wills.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Wills. A-28 amendment has been withdrawn. Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Early this session, you asked us to chat with our superintendents of our area. And the day that we were to bring forward that information, I did have a bill in another committee, and so I wasn't able to be here to share the concerns of my superintendent in my area. They brought forward just two. And one of them was this bill. Mm-hmm. Very concerned. They are self-insured and very concerned that this proposal will reduce their options and increase costs. And so I stand in opposition to this bill. Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion on House File 2180 as amended? So we'll go to and Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to this bill, and this I think may be for Mr. Strom, on the 825 amendment, the author's amendment that we adopted, I know it says that it's appropriated for fiscal year 2015. Don't we normally say this is a one-time appropriation or something to that effect? How can we make sure this is not going to be part of the base moving forward?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, members, we have some general budgeting principles. It's sometimes best to have the belt and suspenders both. So we often add this is a one-time appropriation, but if an appropriation is made for a particular purpose and there's no ongoing formula behind that, that doesn't get rolled into the base. If there were a formula behind that, then that would be a base member or a base issue. But in our area, we often add this is a one-time appropriation just so that we're absolutely clear with everyone that that's what the intent is.
Okay. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the spirit of dispatch, also just a quick question about levy targets. Is this committee going to have a levy target as well?
Representative Woodard, the levy target would be zero.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it very brief. I also want to thank Representative Murphy for her hard work on this bill, and I think we're getting much closer to something that everyone can support, but my school district still have some concerns on this, so I hope that we can I can't support it right now, but I hope that we can continue to work on this and make it a bill that everyone can support.
Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as many of you know, the school pool issue that was on the table for many years ahead of this was a very difficult issue for me and my district, and I opposed it. And I was concerned when this process began with this bill that there might be a similar, that I might have similar issues and concerns, but a lot of those issues have been addressed, and I'll just attribute the goodwill and high-level negotiating skill of the author to taking all parties to the table and really working out many of the issues around service cooperatives. My school district, our insurance committee, all feel like their concerns have been majorly addressed. There still are a few issues. I think the concerns of the self-insured have come to the table today, and it sounds like Representative Murphy will continue to dialogue on those. The appropriation, and even as a one-time appropriation, whether it is an appropriate appropriation is a question to be asked. And then the clarification regarding joint powers. So those are outstanding concerns, but recognizing the work that's already been done on the bill, I will support the bill on its way to a good result.
Representative Newt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, thank you so much for the work on this. You've moved a long way on this. And although our school district is not in favor of the bill, I think we've moved in the direction where the district can still opt out. What I am hoping as you move forward with the bill is that we find ways to reduce the amount of additional administration that it's going to be for the districts, and I think we're going to be pretty well on track. Thank you.
Any further debate? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just asked for a roll call vote on this.
Very good. There's been a roll call vote on this. And Representative Murphy, thank you so much for your work on this bill. I know there was initially when this was introduced, there was concerns on both sides of the aisle, as you know, and you've really worked very hard to address those concerns. So I just appreciate all of your work and bringing this to this committee today. So with that, we have, I think it was the Representative Morgan's motion to, we'll move House File 2180 as amended for re-referral to the State Government Finance Committee, and we have a roll call. So the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Marquardt.
Yes.
Vice Chair Slocum?
Yes.
Representative Woodard?
No.
Anzels?
Yes.
Bernardi?
Yes.
Briner?
Yes.
Dabney? Absent. Sondra Erickson?
No.
Gruenhagen?
No.
Hertas?
No.
Mariani?
Si.
McDonald?
No.
Moran?
Yes.
Morgan?
Yes.
Myra?
No.
Newton?
Yes.
Quam?
Yeah.
Very good.
Radinovich?
Yes.
Seltzer?
No.
Wills?
No.
The vote on 2180 is amended. There being 10 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2180 is re-referred as amended to the State Government Finance Committee. Representative Murphy, thank you so much. Members, thank you. We are adjourned. Sure.